Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. We are an ever-growing force of love with one clear goal: to bring humanity into the new consciousness of nonviolence. I'm your host, Marlene, at Vegan Nation on WCUW 91.3 FM, Worcester, Massachusetts. This is part two of a two-part interview with psychologist Sandra Higgins, founder and director of Go Vegan Ireland billboard campaign, which has now gone global. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us again on Vegan Nation.
You're very welcome, Marlene. Thank you for having me.
And I'd like to ask about the campaign. What's happening now in the last few weeks?
It's gaining momentum all the time. It just started in Ireland, and now we're working on taking it to other countries in Europe, as well as the United States and possibly even India.
Everything is still up right now?
Everything is up throughout Ireland. All trains in Dublin, 55 buses in Dublin and in buses across Ireland, billboards across Ireland and in all bathrooms of universities and colleges throughout Ireland, and some magazines as well. We've got some previously rejected ads published. The two ads in particular are one that says there's no right way to kill someone who wants to live, and the other one, suffering and death, the price they pay for eggs. They were both rejected initially. So it's wonderful to have those up. We are also moving into a phase of the campaign where we want to make a stronger link between what people consume and the animals who are affected by their consumption patterns. And also there's been some more radio interviews and newspaper articles, a lot more interaction with farmers and representatives, particularly from the dairy industry.
I listened to your interviews on the Irish radio stations, and I was so impressed with you. You're very knowledgeable. And boy, you keep up with the boys.
Yeah, you have to. They do not get the idea that other animals are not ours to use, that they're not property. And you're also dealing with people who are making their living from harming other animals and doing so in such a way that they don't even want to face that fact themselves. And I do have empathy. We're just trying to creep our way out of a terrible recession in Ireland. So I can understand if they feel very threatened and very frightened by somebody like us. So I've spent a lot of time in the last few weeks trying to explain to farmers that we're not against them. We're absolutely behind farmers as long as it's non-animal agriculture. And I'm trying to speak about the alternatives that we're being forced into this anyway because of climate change and because of human health difficulties.
I love how you have the solutions available, which of course one of the greatest contributions, I think, as you mentioned, is industrial hemp.
It is. We have to show people that we're practical. The lines of defense that people have taken have been kind of threefold. Number one, they've referred to my campaign as being a fairy tale or a myth. They've also said that veganism is damaging to health, and they've also referred to it as emotional propaganda. In fact, one farmer wrote an article, "Veganism needs to take her blinkers off." So you can see that all those criticisms are very sexist. So I think it's really important to hold on to the emotion and the truth and the integrity of what we're doing, but also to have practical solutions.
And I love how you also added the practical solution with the nut trees.
Yes, because I really believe that, you know, if I had land, that's what I would invest in. I'd have a hemp dairy or some kind of a plant-based dairy and nut trees, fruit and nut trees.
Yes, and I like how you include the intersectionality of justice issues.
Marlene, corporal punishment of children was made illegal in Ireland last week. Legal abuse, that's what that was. Socially sanctioned legal abuse. Well, I never thought that I would see that day, either personally or professionally. So we have that. We have the Marriage Equality Act. We were also the first country in Europe to make smoking in public illegal. I mean, I was a very heavy smoker when that legislation came out. We have black rights issues, we have gay rights issues. I just see speciesism as the last one to overcome, to move towards a more just society. And the basis of it all is compassion. We have this compassion innately. Some people don't like the word because they don't understand it, but our social justice system is built on our innate capacity for compassion. And the more you practice that, the stronger it gets. And it will affect our DNA, and it will affect our evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'd like to ask about the new billboards again. And could you please repeat those, the ones with the slogans, and what animals are on those?
The small lamb that has appeared previously in the billboard that said, "My life is as valuable to me as your life is to you."
It means as much to you as mine to me. I know that this is true. Your loving heart reaches out to mine, and the light in your eyes.
He's now featured in an ad, "There's no right way to kill someone who wants to live." That's at the moment displayed in colleges and universities. And that will run until quite into the new year, into February.
Great. And what was the other one about the eggs?
The other one is Tamara Kennedy's portrait of the hen who she shot during an undercover investigation. And it says, "Suffering and death, the price they pay for eggs." And we're running some new street ads in the next few weeks.
Wonderful. And this is all about education.
Yes, it is. It is.
Sandra, what is happening with some of the opposition?
A lot of the difficulties that the campaign faced, and those difficulties are continuing, and they were censorship in a patriarchal species of society. This interview shows how different it is because I'm being cut off all the time on the radio. When I go to say something, I'm being interrupted, and I almost feel like I have to interrupt back to get the animal's position heard. And very often the opposition get the last word. Even in terms of the press, they won't publish the press releases. When they do, they run it in one edition of the newspaper, so only a very small population of Ireland received that edition. Then it doesn't run in the second edition. And very frustrating to have a press release from a body of people like Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine stating that they support the Go Vegan Ireland campaign, they support plant-based diets in Ireland for health reasons, and this is a human rights issue, and the Irish press won't publish it. Here we are with a wonderful PCRM press release saying we support the Irish Go Vegan campaign, and they won't print it in the newspapers.
I'm very grateful for community radio, allowing citizens to be heard.
That is wonderful. That's a real mark of justice, to be able to hear the other person's position, even if you think you don't agree with it. That's wonderful to have a radio station that will do that. That's really fair. And veganism is about being fair, because we all know that it's not fair to harm somebody else, and it's not fair to make someone defenseless or to hurt someone who's defenseless. It's just a simple act of fairness.
It's the golden rule.
It is. It's the golden rule. You know, we don't have a vegan world yet. We're running this campaign in a non-vegan world where people are very defensive and very reluctant to hear it, even when it affects their own health or the environment that humans need to live in. They're still resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the criticism related to the female aspects of it and the emotional aspects of it, and dismissed it as propaganda. So this is what we're up against, and we have to fight this not with violence. We have to fight this with love and with that feminine principle of a world where everyone is equal, where every human has enough to eat, where everyone is treated the same, everyone has the same rights regardless of species. And that's what will win. That's what will make a vegan world.
And on that note, two of your sentences in your article that is on your page, in your website, thecompassionfoundation.org, I'd like to read. Quote from Sandra Higgins, Eating without compassion can be one of the greatest sources of suffering. Compassion is not just an instinct, it is also a skill that we can learn in practice.
But I spend a lot of my time in my psychology practice encouraging people to go back and find their inner wisdom, their innate wisdom, their intuitive wisdom. And this applies whether I'm running programs for people with eating distress or eating disorders or whatever kind of a problem I'm dealing with, whether it's a personality problem, a relationship problem, a mood problem. I'm continually encouraging people to go back to their intuitive wisdom. And we're basically good people. We know that we have a huge capacity for empathy. We have a huge capacity for justice and compassion. No child in their right mind would eat another animal. No child in their right mind would take a mother from an animal so that they could have their milk. When they lose that wisdom is when these external factors come in that lack compassion, like the industries that advertise dairy products. Of course, the child's taste buds and innate wisdom are going to be lost with that. But we have it innately, we have it intuitively, and that's what we need to go back to. And that's why I find vegan approach absolutely essential to all the problems that I deal with in humans in my practice. They're the healers, they're the experts of their own lives, and all they need to do is go back and find that compassionate source within themselves. And then they will eat a plant-based diet, they will live a life where they're kind and compassionate to themselves and where they're just to others. You can see that one of the biggest obstacles is the speciesist mindset. For instance, there was an article in the Sunday Independent last week where Mr. Comer from the Irish Creamery Milk Association was interviewed. He was also interviewed with me on Highland Radio. And he said that he didn't accept that milk is a mother's tears is either correct or useful, which shows how far removed the ordinary man on the street engaged in harming other animals is from reality. Because they have accused us of talking about fairy tales and myth, but the myth is that other animals don't feel and that they don't matter. And we know scientifically that that's a myth.
Whenever I hear all those arguments, I keep thinking, well, we're coming from a patriarchal culture for 12,000 years.
The idea that this is very new, that we're only doing this for 12,000 years, most people don't know that. They think we've always done this.
I often think when I hear about these arguments that the connection of how it's discrimination and exclusion and how many of these people who are not vegan and yet care and agree with animal rights for dogs and cats and horses.
I often refer to the fact that animal rights activists in Korea are fighting for cats and dogs who are used in the meat industry, and that it's just a cultural difference that we don't use those animals here, that we have a different relationship to them.
Yes, and I see this as a social justice issue, and it's so clear that the basic foundation of it is the oppression and exploitation of females and the sexual anatomy and physiology of females for their lactation secretions, dairy, their ovulatory menstrual secretions, eggs, and of course their offspring. And yeah, then of course the males suffer, especially the very young, one-day-old male chicks in the egg industry, the bull calves and the heifers in the dairy industry, and of course all the other dead flesh industries.
Even in the pig industry, because we have artificial insemination for pig flesh. We have artificial insemination of turkeys.
I know. The females, all of them from any of the species, are suffering horribly. And again, I think it's especially women who can relate to that. And so it's just a matter of taking off the blinders so that people can see the truth.
Yeah. I saw earthlings. I went to a goat dairy. A few days later, I saw earthlings. And that was it. I went vegan. I do education with a lot of people who see earthlings and they're still not convinced at all. So we do know from functional MRI scanning that people's brains are different. The brains of vegans react differently to suffering in humans and animals to the brains of non-vegans. So I think there is a difference. There are personal differences. Some people are more open and more empathic than other people. So I think it's good use of our time to work with those people who are already open. Because once we reach a critical mass, then we can work on the health arguments, the environmental arguments, the arguments that are of interest to humans as well as other animals. So we have the excellent plant-based plant-based dairy alternatives, plant-based meat alternatives, synthetic clothing. We're developing ways of working in medicine that don't test on other animals. Once we have a critical mass of vegans, and we also have these replacements, that's our key to getting a vegan world.
It's time to take a break. We are joined by Sandra Higgins via Skype in Ireland. She is the founder and director of the Go Vegan Ireland campaign and a practicing psychologist.
You're in tune to WCUW 91.3 FM, community radio serving central Massachusetts, online at wcuw.org.
Hi there, this is Andrew Tanacho inviting you to our Saturday morning program, The Albanian Hour, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Come and join us and have a great start to your Saturday.
Hello, this is Bob Zukowski, and I'm inviting you to join me on Saturday and Sunday afternoons for Polka Party from 2 to 4, right here on WCUW Worcester.
Welcome back from the break. I'm your host, Marlene, at Vegan Nation. We are joined by Sandra Higgins via Skype in Ireland. Sandra, could you please give us some of the details so that people can understand what is happening in as standard agricultural practices? So I'd like to start first with dairy and then go through the whole kit and caboodle of what happens to the heifers and the cows and the bull calves.
Okay, so it starts with the extraction of semen from males. They don't use females anymore. They use two males. One male is tied with a ring on his nose. His head is tied to the ground. And the other bull mounts him. And when he goes to ejaculate, they take the semen from him. The reason they use two males is the repeated mounting used to cause pelvic fractures in females. So they're used continually for the sole purpose of taking their semen from them. Then in the artificial insemination of females, they're confined by, their head is locked and they're confined so that they can't move. And an arm is inserted through the rectum to feel the cervix, and then an instrument is inserted into the vagina to forcibly impregnate them. And then cows go through the same gestation period as a human woman. It's 9 months, and the calves are separated very soon after birth. The stress even affects the process of milking them, the cows being able to let down the milk. So this is discussed in the scientific journals. Will we separate them immediately, or at 3 days, or at 6 weeks? Will we let them see each other but not be able to touch each other, and does this increase the distress? So it's well known. This is not a fact that the industry is not aware of. They're very well aware of the dreadful psychological distress that's caused by taking a baby from their mother. And that's what dairy is predicated on. Babies are separated. In Ireland, in the goat dairy industry, the males are killed at birth because there's no market for their flesh. The males in cows are used for flesh. The babies who are left are drinking artificial milk from rubber teats on a concrete wall with no chance to touch anybody who can act as a mother or a surrogate mother or teach them any social or survival skills. They're just left motherless, and the mothers are left without their children.
All these practices in veterinary medicine and all of it has been founded on patriarchy without the female wisdom and the female's input into any institutions, religious, educational, and economics at its origins, and even still now, since we've all been indoctrinated and it takes a breakthrough, which of course is the vegan revolution. And can you tell us about eggs?
Just before I go on to eggs, I'd just like to mention that they are absolutely milking the last cent out of these beings. They're milked for most of their pregnancy. We can imagine how we as women would feel if that was happening to us. Then they're dried off for the last 2 months, and they're continually impregnated and lactating for the 7 or 8 years that they live before they're spent. Their bodies can hardly stand up, whereas in the wild they would live between 20 and 25 years. And so they're slaughtered at 7 or 8 years of age when their bodies just give in. They break, really.
Please inform us about the slaughter process, how once they can no longer give birth or lactate, how they're shipped off to a slaughterhouse and what that's like.
Even the shipping to slaughter is very stressful because they can be terrified, especially the processes that are used to bring them from one place to another. In some of my radio interviews, the farmers denied that they use electric shock to move them. But those instruments are still for sale in Ireland. So they use electric shock, anal electric shock, to immobilise animals to, for instance, cut their nails or dehorn them, or even in lots of different procedures. They're herded onto slaughter trucks. They don't want to go onto them. So they use some kind of painful measures to push them in and then to get them off when they get to the slaughterhouse. Then a lot of people think that the animals are shot with a gun and that they're dead. But all that happens is that they're immobilized, so it's safe to work with them. They have to be alive when their throats are cut, because the heart has to be beating to pump the blood through the body. Otherwise, we'd have blood-sodden meat. And of course, we're not carnivores, so that's not what humans want to eat. So the blood has to be pumped through the body, and they have to be alive for this to happen. So in the last couple of years, some reports have come out stating that a significant number of animals regain consciousness. They're either never made unconscious in the first place, or they regain consciousness and they're fully aware at the point of slaughter. Which, of course, if you look at the difference between welfare and abolitionism, it doesn't really matter, because nobody wants to die. Nobody wants their life taken from them. Nobody wants to be murdered when they're still in young adulthood or childhood. But on top of that, to be fully conscious while you're being very painfully murdered is inexcusable. Our own Minister for Agriculture has stood up in the Dáil in our political system and said, I don't know if you've ever been in a slaughterhouse, but you can't kill other animals without inflicting pain on them.
And I'd like to ask you a few questions about the egg industry.
Yeah, it's very similar to the dairy industry. A lot of the time we see the defence of the humane myth that ahimsa milk or free-range eggs or organic eggs are humane and kind to the animals, so people feel better when they use them. But actually, what I've learned is the real crime that we commit against those animals is that we breed them for our use in the first place. So through a process of selective breeding, we have changed their bodies from the wild animals they were. So in the same way that dairy cows suffer metabolic stress, the real prison for chickens is their own bodies. They've been selectively bred to produce eggs in far greater quantities than they would in the wild. In the wild, they would lay one or two clutches a year for the sole purpose of hatching their young, because that's what an egg is. It's a chicken's menstrual cycle and childbirth, just that they give birth in a slightly different way to us. They sit on the eggs for 21 days rather than we hold the baby inside for 9 months. That's the only difference. It's their reproductive system and their childbearing capacity. The fact that they've been selectively bred to lay eggs on an almost daily basis has changed their body in such a way that the rate of cancer in egg-laying hens when they get to be a couple of years of age is 100%. They're very prone to a variety of infections. Some of them they pick up in the environment they live in, and some of them they pick up because if something goes wrong with the egg-laying process, which of course it does because they're producing them in such vast amounts. So an egg might break inside, or something might go wrong with the shell gland that produces the shell around the egg, and the egg yolk gets into the abdominal cavity and causes peritonitis, and they become extremely sick. There are a lot of illnesses that they get that are directly attributed to laying eggs. The biggest issue for them is the bodies that they're bred into, which means that there is no such thing as a humane egg.
All of this is so clear that this is a vegan revolution that's based on the feminine principle of compassion and empathy. I'd like to touch a little bit about sheep and wool.
Yeah, wool is just a byproduct of the meat industry. Again, it's because of our interference in these wild animals. In the wild, sheep didn't have wool in the quantities that the sheep we know now have wool. They had a light covering of wool, but they actually had hair, and they lost their hair at certain times of the year when the weather was warm. They shed it themselves. It's our domination of them 12,000 years ago. That's where the problem lies. The crime is not in the shearing. The crime is in breeding them. That's our crime.
Could you share a little bit of information about the Eden Farmed Animal Sanctuary?
Yes, I mean, Eden is the inspiration for all this, and the residents here are the inspiration for this global Go Vegan campaign. At the moment, there are about 90 residents living here. We have chickens, a lot of chickens rescued from the egg industry, geese, turkeys, ducks, sheep, goats from a local dairy industry. I run Eden by myself, so it's kind of a tall order to be running this campaign and running the sanctuary at the same time, but I've reached the stage where I need to employ somebody to run the sanctuary with me, so I'll be advertising that job very soon. It's a salaried position, and if any of your listeners are interested and they're qualified to work with large animals and they've experience on a sanctuary, they're more than welcome to apply to me for the details.
Thank you. And Sandra, what's happening with the global campaign?
We're working on the global campaign at the moment. Joanna is organizing the American wing of that, and she's working on the designs at the moment.
You are powerful women, and you are greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Are there any additional messages that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, there are two messages. The first is there are two people I'd like to acknowledge and thank. First is Joanna Lucas, because without Joanna's designs, we wouldn't have this Irish wing of the campaign and we wouldn't have a global campaign. And the other person and group that I would like to acknowledge are the people who funded this campaign, because obviously without them, there would be no campaign. And the friends and people who have supported me throughout it. And the other thing I'd like to say to activists out there, we had a team of three people, and we were able to run this campaign with that very small team. So I would say to other activists, dream the best possible dreams that you can for the liberation of other animals, and don't let anything stand in your way. Do what you can to be the best possible activist, and hope all the time, hold that dream of a vegan world and keep hoping, and don't let anything stand in your way as you fight for their liberty.
And when you speak those words, I think of the quote, as we free the animals, we free ourselves.
Yes, we do. We do.
And Sandra, how can our listeners contact you?
At edenanimalsanctuary@yahoo.ie, or through any of the websites, edenfarmanimalsanctuary.com, the Go Vegan website, or on any of the Facebook pages that I run.
Okay, and that's govegan.ie, thecompassionfoundation.org, and matildaspromise.org.
That's right, yeah. And I'm more than happy to help any other activist or to receive feedback on my own activism from people.
Thank you very much, Sandra, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you, Marlene, for having me again. Thank you so much, Marlene, for your interest in my work and for giving me this lovely opportunity to talk on radio.
We've been joined by Sandra Higgins via Skype in Meads, Ireland. Sandra is the founder and director of the Global Go Vegan ad campaign. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. The music we heard at the commencement of today's show is The Swallow's Tale by Dervish. And Daniel Redwood's song, Someone, Not Something. Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.
WCUW is renovating the facade of our premises at 910 Main Street in Worcester. We're going to be installing glass blocks, and we're offering two unique opportunities to make your mark. One, have your name etched on a single line with up to 22 characters for $91.30. Or two, your business or favourite program or programmer with up to 6 lines of text for $500. And include a simple logo for an extra $50. Names will grace each side of the glass block. Available space is limited. The etched glass blocks will be placed between the front room performance and the conference area, so your name or acknowledgement will be visible to all who travel through the WCUW 91.3 FM studios. You will also receive a one-year membership of $50 value, which offers two-for-one admission to the Worcester Art Museum and 10% discounts at Union Music and Music Worcester concerts. Go to our website at wcuw.org or call 508 753 1012 during business hours to secure your spot.